In the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 6, verses 19 through 23, we find the Lord directing us in terms of where we are to have our heart, lay up our treasure. Matthew 6, 19 to 23. Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. But if thine eye be evil, thy whole body shall be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in thee be darkness, how great is that darkness? And then verse 24, as we consider, what does that mean for our eye to be single? In what way is it to be one? Well, verse 24 says, no man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Now, he began that passage in verse 19, pointing out the fact that all these things on this world that men treasure are temporal in nature. Moth and rust corrupts, thieves steal. How many of these things that are of this world last? Well, nothing physical does. Nothing that is material lasts forever. I mean, certainly nothing, the longest anything is going to last is for the duration of our lifetime that we're here. We're not going to be on this earth forever. Now, the idea that that our life on this earth is temporary, and that this world and its things are temporary, and certainly our relationship to them here on this earth is temporary. How radical an idea is that? And how many people are not on some level aware of those facts? I mean, those are indisputable facts. But of course, what is the important part of it? To recognize that and then to put that into action, our understanding of that fact, by turning away from these things and not having laying up our treasure here on this earth, where we're not going to be very long and where the things that are in it aren't going to be here very long. If our treasure is in this world, that's where our heart is, and then we are unprepared for eternity. But if we would then recognize that it's the things that are eternal that we need to value, that needs to be our treasure, and where we're laying it up in heaven, then we are going, and if that's where our heart is, then we are prepared for eternity. Then he moves to that teaching about our eye and that it's necessary for our eye to be single so that we can be full of light. Well, single in what way? Well, we can't have our treasure, lay up our treasure in both places. Our heart can't be in both places. Our heart will be where we lay our treasure up. And it can't be in both places, and we cannot serve two masters. We have to make the choice of whether to lay up our treasure here and have our heart here, to lay up our treasure in heaven and have our heart there, to serve God or to serve material things. It's an either-or choice. Now, it begins with that understanding that this world and our presence in it and all of the things of it are temporary, and how foolish it is to spend our short time here laying up our treasure in a place and having our heart in a place where we're not going to be very long, and to be unprepared for the eternity that we're going to be in. Well, why isn't everybody then, if anybody and everybody can recognize that we are going to one day leave this world, and that we're not going to take our possessions with us, everybody knows that. Well, why is everybody laying up their treasure on this earth then? Isn't it astounding, really, when we think of it like that? What it shows us is how strong the delusion is, and the lie is that people believe that they're sold by the devil, that in spite of our all knowing that we're going to be here for a short time, that the majority of this world is caught up in living for and having their treasure and their heart in this world where they're not going to be for long. So what's the problem there? In Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 11, and I know Brother Johnson brought a lesson or made a big point about the wording of the that's in this verse, Ecclesiastes 3 verse 11, not long before he went back to India But in Ecclesiastes 3:11, he says, "He hath made everything beautiful in his time. He hath set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end." As Brother Johnson pointed out, literally that is, he set eternity in their heart. Well, we all know that there is an eternity to come, that we have a God who made us, that we need to seek and to serve. Who does not know or hold that truth, that there is an eternally powerful God? That's the wording in Romans chapter 1. Who has the excuse to say they don't know that, and that they didn't know that they should seek that Creator who made them that they belong to? Nobody has an excuse. He has set that in our heart. He's given that knowledge to us that he's revealed from the very creation itself. We all know that we have a God, that there is going to be an eternity, and we all know that we're not going to be here very long. So why is it that so many and this world as a whole lies in its wickedness and is pursuing these things and have their heart in this world that is so temporary? There's also this problem as it's described in the book of Isaiah in chapter 44. When he's describing in detail the idol maker here, and he goes through the whole process of the describing the making of the idols and how they work with these things. In verse 12, Isaiah 44, verse 12, he says, "The smith with the tongs both worketh in the coals and fashion it with hammers and worketh it with the strength of his arms. Yea, he is hungry and his strength faileth. He drinketh no water and is faint. The carpenter stretcheth out his rule. He marketh it out with a line. He fitteth it with planes and he marketh it out with a compass and maketh it after the figure of a man, according to the beauty of a man, that it may remain in the house. He heweth him down cedars and taketh the cypress and the oak, which he strengtheneth for himself among the trees of the forest. He planteth an ash, and the rain doth nourish it. Then shall it be for a man to burn, for he will take thereof and warm himself. Yea, he kindleth it and baketh bread. Yea, he maketh a god and worshipeth it. He maketh it a graven image and falleth down thereto. He burneth part thereof in the fire, with part thereof he eateth flesh. He roasteth roast and is satisfied. Yea, he warmeth himself and saith, Aha, I am warm. I have seen the fire. And the residue thereof he maketh a god, even his graven image. He falleth down unto it and worshipeth it and prayeth unto it and saith, Deliver me, for thou art my God. They have not known nor understood, for he hath shut their eyes that they cannot see, and their hearts that they cannot understand. And none considereth in his heart, neither is there knowledge nor understanding to say, I have burned part of it in the fire. Yea, also I have baked bread upon the coals thereof. I have roasted flesh and eaten it. And shall I make the residue thereof an abomination? Shall I fall down to the stock of a tree? He feedeth on ashes. A deceived heart hath turned him aside, that he cannot deliver his soul, nor say, Is there not a lie in my right hand?" There's a strong delusion, and they believe a lie. He's describing one of those big lies right there in Isaiah chapter 44. But in that, he also shows that it's God that's delivered them to this spiritual blindness because of this reason. They're not seeking him to glorify him as God. And so here we have a world that is deceived. They have a strong delusion and believe a lie, using the wording of 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verses 10 and 11. And that's what this world is deceived, or who the world is deceived by. And it's because they do not glorify God as God. They will not hold that truth in righteousness, that they have a God that made them, that they belong to, that they should seek and serve and live for with all of their heart, having a single eye, living only for him and not for this world. So what is the world doing? Well, they have this lie that they're believing, whether it's by following idols or whatever else it is. They're living a lie when they are not serving God and they're living for this world. And how many people stop and think, I mean, they already know they're not going to be here very long, and how many of them stop and think, well, here I am wasting the short life that I have, spending it seeking after these things that either I'm never going to have or I'm only going to have for a very short time. And then I'm going off to an eternity where the God who made me is going to judge me, and I'm not prepared for that. I mean, how many people consider that and that they're living a lie? He says they don't consider it. They can't. They're blinded. Now, of course, if they will consider their God who made them and then start to feel after him, he's not far from any one of us, and those who seek will find. And if we draw near to God, he will draw near to us. There is that solution to that problem. But it is going to start with our thinking about, considering our Maker, his purpose, and turning to him, to look to these eternal things and to set our, lay up our treasure there in heaven and have our heart there. So that's what we have to decide that we're going to look at. So we've got to make that decision to be thinking about, considering, and looking at what is eternal, to seek God, to live for him, to be prepared for that eternity. There's a particular Greek word that is used on a few occasions in the New Testament. Skapeo is the particular word. And it means to, well, we have our word scope that comes from that, scopeo, the Greek word. Our English word scope, and we know what a scope is, whether we're talking about a microscope or a telescope. We use that word scope for what we look through, to see something. Well, the root of that word is this Greek word, scopeo, and it means literally to aim at, like as in to spy at, to aim in our looking. It comes from skopos or skopos, which is a word that means a watch or a sentry or a scout, someone who's looking. Well, somebody who is a watchman or a scout, is that word used for casually glancing at something or just maybe casting our eyes in a particular direction for just a little time, taking a glance at it briefly? No, it's a word that has to do with looking with concentration, searching out to seek out to see what is there. And it's with that vigilance that's going to be with that. So that's the root of this particular word that we want to see how that it's used. In line with how we introduced this, looking at this point of our eternity and being prepared for that and looking at the eternal things. And that's where we want to start here in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, a passage that we looked at so many times before. But let's go back there and look at 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And it's in verse 18 that we're going to find this word scopeo that's used there, that in terms of what we're looking at, or should look at, the eternal things rather than those temporal things of this world. Let's look at verses 16 through 18 once more, as this is all tied together. He says in verse 16, "For which cause we faint not, but though our outward man perish." Well, is that reason to faint when we realize, hey, wait a minute? And there is that point. We don't think about that too much naturally anyway. That's why he says, "When remember our Creator in the days of our youth." But when we're young and everything, every day we're getting taller and we're growing, we're getting bigger and stronger. That's kind of exciting. And I think all of us probably have had our growth process marked on a door frame or a wall somewhere in a house that we grew up in. And we got to see that progress, or we do that with our children, and it's so exciting for them, or as it was for us, going through that growth process. They're getting taller, they're getting stronger. And when we're a child, it's all getting stronger and bigger, and which is the opposite of what's coming very soon after that. But it is not long before we realize, hey, wait a minute. I'm not growing any. I'm done growing taller. I'm done getting stronger. Actually, there are a few things I can't do like I used to be able to do. And then that list gets longer. And there are a lot more things that we can't do, or we can't do it like we did before. We soon recognize that No, we're not getting stronger. We're actually getting weaker, and we're not going to be. It's a reminder that we're not going to be here forever. We have lots of reminders of that as we get older. So it's only for a brief time in childhood where it all looks great physically, like we're just going to be getting stronger all the way through. But we know that process goes the other way very soon. So do we faint about that? Well, no. That, what a bummer. We're now getting weaker. And we even start shrinking a little bit. Things aren't getting better for us physically. So do we just despair over that? We're not going to be here very long? Well, that's no reason to despair. And that's why he says we faint not, though our outward man perish. Well, if there was anything to faint about, how about fainting about thinking about we're going to die? And most of us are a lot closer to that day than we are to the day we were born. So do we despair over that, faint over that? Well, he says we shouldn't. And why not? He says, for though our outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. What's going on in the inward man? See, there's the difference. We have two parts to us, that outward and the inner man. Now, the outward man, yes, this physical part of us, this body decays. We do get older. We do die. We are here like a little puff of smoke, that little vapor that is here for a little time and then vanishes away. Then we go to eternity. Well, we're not going to be here very long. And if all we have is right here, then there is reason to despair. There is reason to faint. There's no hope in that. But that's not the case. We do have an eternity that we're going to. We have a part of us, the inner part of us, that will go on to eternity. And that heart and mind and soul that God made us, made our inner man of, that spirit that we have, is eternal in nature. And what should be happening with that part of us, at the same time the outward part of us is getting weaker, what should be going on the inside, and will be if we are laying up our treasure in heaven? We'll be getting stronger. And we've noted it before now that the day we leave this earth, the day we die, is obviously the weakest point that we are physically that in our entire existence here. Because then we die, we're gone, we're dead. That is the ultimate weak point. I hope that did not shock anyone to learn that particular fact. We all know that. Now, at that very same moment, where should we be spiritually at that very exact moment in time? Where physically we're at our weakest and we die. Well, in our inner man at that time, when we leave here, that should be our peak. That should be when we are at our strongest, and that goes on to eternity. So we continue to exist, we continue to live, and we take with us that inner man that has been conformed into the image of Christ, if that's how we have spent our time on this earth, living for that purpose and preparing ourselves for that eternity. So we go to eternity, and here we are. We're in eternity with that same inner man, but we are strong in it. Does that sound like a despairing situation to be in? Not at all. And so that's verse 16. While we're here in this life, that growth process requires us to have our faith tried. And we have persecutions for righteousness' sake. Verse 17 says, for our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. So there's a total contrast in the degree of our, degree of our affliction versus the degree of our reward in eternity, and the duration of our affliction and the duration of our reward. The affliction is light and but for a moment. The reward is eternal and an exceeding weight in comparison. So there we go as far as encouragement. What we have to go through here for this brief time that we're here, we're going to have a reward. It's not, in fact, Romans 8 and verse 18 says it's not worthy to be compared. This affliction, these sufferings now, compared with the glory that shall be revealed. It's not even worthy to be compared. Verse 18, and here's the basis of it. While we look not at the things, and there's the word scopeo there. We look not, we're not scoping. We are not spying at or being watchful of the things that are seen. but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Now there's the bottom line difference between our outward man and our inward man, between the things of this world and the things that are of God. Everything in this world, and our outward man included, is all temporal. There's nothing that we can see with our physical eyes, even through a microscope. Nothing that is of material in nature is eternal. It's all going to be done away. Even the world knows that. They call that Isaac Newton called that, that was referred to as the second law of thermodynamics. Everything is decaying. And so there's no such thing as eternal matter. Everything is going to eventually be done away with. So it's a scientific law. Well, that's recognized again by the world. But how many people in the world take that knowledge, well, yeah, there's nothing around here that's going to last, and then start preparing for eternity? That's what we need to do, not looking at this world and laying up our treasure here, but looking at the things that are eternal. That's the only way we're going to be prepared for it. 1 Timothy chapter 6 teaches the same principle, and he also warns us in this from verse 3. We're going to have a lot of encouragement from this world to do the opposite of what we should. Again, this is the lie. The devil's trying to sell us the lie so that we have that same lie in our right hand that we don't even consider. Well, there I am living a lie. That I'm going, like I'm going to be here forever when I'm not. So in verse 3 here in 1 Timothy 6, he says, if any man teach otherwise and consent not to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and to the doctrine which is according to godliness, he is proud, knowing nothing, but doting about questions and strifes of words, whereof cometh envy, strife, railings, and evil surmisings, perverse disputings of men of corrupt minds, and destitute of the truth, supposing that gain is godliness, from such withdraw thyself. Anyone that is teaching that gain is godliness, and that's the essence of are going to be involved in part of every false religion, just about. The opposite is what is true, verse 6, but godliness with contentment is great gain. Verse 7, for we brought nothing into this world, and it's certain we can carry nothing out. And having good food and raiment, let us be therewith content. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But thou, O man of God, flee these things. Flee a love of these material things. We cannot serve two masters. We cannot serve God and mammon, material things. Flee a love of and a seeking after and a living for these and laying up our treasure and having our heart in this world where it's all temporary. What should we do? We should follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, meekness, fight the good fight of faith, lay hold on eternal life, whereunto thou hast was also called and hast professed a good profession among many witnesses. We need to flee from a love of these material things and follow after. And all those things he was naming there are these things that are unseen, as he put it in 2 Corinthians 4:18, which by nature, and this is true of all that he lists there, righteousness. I mean, what does that look like? What color is it? What shape is righteousness? I mean, it's not a material thing, and it's not something that is seen physically. What about godliness? What about faith, love, patience, and meekness? See, those are all unseen things. These are the eternal things. And he says to follow after that. That's what we need to be scoping. That's what we need to be looking at. And that means looking at from the standpoint of then valuing, living for, and seeking after, and not after the other things at all. So that's the encouragement we have there. We also have it in Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3, and starting in verse 1 of that chapter. Colossians 3 verse 1 begins, if you then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth. For ye are dead, and your life is hid with Christ in God. Now, if we really are looking at the unseen things, the eternal things, then that's the way it's going to be. We will be dead in what way? Well, physically, we're alive, obviously, if we can still set our affection on the things above and not on the things of the earth. We can't do that if we're physically dead and we're already gone from here. So in what way is he speaking about that we're dead? And he's not talking about then if we're spiritually dead, because anyone spiritually dead is going to be doing the opposite of that. But in what way are we dead? What has happened to our old man and its ways and our old way of looking at things when we did look at and when we laid up our treasure here and we lived for these things of this world, and that's where our heart was? That's the old man that was crucified with Christ, put to death, so that then we could be buried with him and raised with him. And that's why he says, if you then be risen with Christ. So this is speaking to those of us who have crucified the old man. And so we had a change of mind and we turned to him to live for him now, to cast aside that lie that was in our right hand. When we no longer are believing that lie, but rather we are living for glorifying God as God. Well, that's going to require us to set our affection on things above. I mean, that goes with that repentance that we had. We need to continue to do that. And so as far as our existence, if we crucified our old man, its ways with our own will and our own desires, living for this world, and now we're living only to serve our Creator that we belong to, then as far as any independent existence of ourselves apart from living for our Maker, we're dead. And that's what he says there. We're dead. That old man is gone. Our life is hid with Christ in God. I mean, that's the only life we should have. That sounds exactly like Galatians 2:20, doesn't it? When Paul said he was crucified with Christ, when he said, nevertheless I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. And the life that he said he was living in the flesh, he was living by the faith of the Son of God. That was it. That was the only life Paul had. From the road to Damascus, when he was converted in Acts 9, for the rest of his existence on this earth, that was Paul's only life, Christ living in him, him living for Christ. Galatians 6 and verse 16 says, Paul said, I am crucified in this world unto me. There was no relationship there anymore. He was dead to the world was dead to him. He was only living for Christ, only living with his affection on the things above, with his treasure laid up in heaven, and seeking and serving his God and living for Christ who died for him. Well, that's what he says that we have to do. Now, as part of that, and he goes into the details of the process there after verse 3, he says, when Christ, who is our life, this is in Colossians 3, continuing on verse 4, when Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall you also appear with him in glory. Mortify, therefore, put to death, therefore. Now, if our affection is being set on the things above and not on the things of the earth, he says, here are the things to kill. This is our kill list. Verse 5, mortify, therefore, your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence and covetousness, which is idolatry, for which things sake the wrath of God cometh on the children of disobedience, in the which you also walked sometime when you lived in them. See, we all had that lie in our right hand. But verse 8 says, but now you also put off all these, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. Lie not one to another, seeing that you put off the old man with his deeds. So there's the list of things we've got to put to death. That's the kill list. Put all of those things off. Purge all of those things out. They're not part of the love of God. They're not part of the divine nature that we're seeking to have in us, to be filled with, conformed to. Verse 10, and have put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge after the image of him that created him. So here's the image of Christ. Verse 11, where there is neither Greek nor Jew, circumcision nor uncircumcision, barbarian, Scythian, bond nor free, but Christ is all and in all. Put on, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering, forbearing one another, and forgiving one another, if any man have a quarrel against any. Even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye. And above all these things, put on charity, which is the bond of perfectness, of completeness. So here are the parts of the nature of God, of the love of God, that we need to have formed in us, the image that we're to be conformed to put on there. This is that spiritual growth process that he's commanding us to follow. Now, this goes along with what we read in Luke chapter 11, which is so close to where we started in Matthew 6 a while ago, as he again speaks about this light of the body being the eye. But as he's describing this here in Luke 11, he's going to give a further point to it that's going to parallel what we were just studying in Colossians 3, this spiritual growth process, having our eye single. But let's read from Luke 11 here in verses 34 through 36. The light of the body is the eye. Therefore, when thine eye is single, thy whole body also is full of light. Now, we read that in Matthew 6 also. He says, but when thy eye is evil, thy body also is full of darkness. Take heed, therefore, that the light which is in thee be not darkness. Now, that take heed, therefore, that take heed, that's the word scopeo again, the same word that he used in 2 Corinthians 4:18. While we look not at these things on the earth, these temporal things, but rather at for the eternal things. So here he says, take heed, that is, look, scope it. These things in terms of ourselves, he said, take heed, therefore, that the light which is in thee be not darkness. If thy whole body, therefore, be full of light, having no part dark, the whole shall be full of light, as when the bright shining of a candle doth give thee light. Now, he's not talking about our physical eye and physical body there in that process, ultimately, is he? Now, of course, we have to have our physical eye and body in line, in subjection to the commandments of God, but that's a reflection of what's going to be in our hearts, which is where this growth process is taking place. So he's talking about taking heed to ourselves that what? That there is no darkness, no part dark, that we only have light in us. Now, where's that light versus darkness? Where would that be? That's describing what's got to be in our spiritual heart when he's talking about what's in our eye. But that's why he says to look at. Look at that. Well, while we look not at the unseen things that are temporal, the things that are seen which are temporal, but we look at the unseen things that are eternal. Well, that needs to be translated into then examining ourselves. Okay, well, do I have any of those things in me? What we saw in Colossians 3. Do I have any of those things that are on the kill list? Mortify these things that are in you. Put these things to death. Well, if I have any of those things at all, do I have any part dark? Then we do. But he said for us to, we need to be full of light, having no part dark. So there's what the goal is. What are we to purge from our hearts? All of these things with all of its deeds, anything that is not of the nature of God, that we've got to purge out. And then we have to see, look at ourselves and see these things that are eternal and then live to have those things formed in us. So we have to be very aware and looking each day that we're living constantly at ourselves, seeking after what's eternal and cooperating with God in this growth process so that we have all the evil purged out of us. Let's look at chapter 6 as we're running out of time here. But Luke chapter 6 in verses 43 through 45, he says, for a good tree bringeth not forth corrupt fruit, neither doth a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. For every tree is known by his own fruit. I mean, that again is a fact. Of course, the point of this isn't to educate us in agriculture, but this is something that we all know, that every tree is known by its fruit. I was passing down the road the other day, and I could see all there were peach trees everywhere. You can see that, or whether you go down Jan's driveway and you're introduced to apple trees right there when you turn down the driveway. I mean, we see these, we know these things. Well, there's an apple tree. What does it mean? It produces apples. I mean, you're not going to see you've never grown a peach on one of those trees there on your driveway, I don't think. It's only apples, if that. But, I mean, it's not going to be something else. But we all know that. But what is he saying here? This is true of us spiritually. And what's the tree here that he's talking about and its fruit? What's the tree that he's making the analogy to here? Our hearts, our spiritual hearts. And so every tree is known by its fruits. And he says, for of thorns men do not gather figs, nor of bramble bush gather they grapes. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. For of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaketh. It's the fruit is that what's produced from that treasure that's in our heart. There's the tree. Our heart is going to be known by the fruit it's producing. It's telling us something from our very words that he mentions there. For the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Every time we speak a word, that's fruit. That's fruit that's been produced from our spiritual heart. So we have an opportunity to inspect fruit every time we open our mouths and say something. We can learn about ourselves then. What did I just say? We need to be thinking like that. What did I just say? We need to think about that before we say it too, don't we? But if we say something, we need to look at it. Well, was that Ephesians 4:29? Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, it may minister grace to the hearers. Well, what I just said, was it something good? Was it for the use of edifying, or was it corrupt in some way? Well, if we have something corrupt coming out of there, in whatever way it is, and that can be a bad word, some vile word, something we shouldn't be saying at all. It could be something damaging to somebody, tearing them down rather than edifying somebody. Well, we can look at that, and whatever's come out of there is fruit that's produced from the treasure in our hearts. If there's something corrupt there, what does it say that's in our heart? There's something corrupt in our heart. We need to purge that out. But that's when we're looking at the spiritual things, the eternal things, and we're working to purge out all of those things, kill all of those things, get rid of all of those things that are in our heart that aren't good. And that's true of our thoughts, words, and deeds. All of that's fruit from the heart and is showing us what we need to work on. Now, whatever good is produced there, we should be able to identify the good that's in our heart that produced that. That should encourage us. And we need to continue to do that and grow in more of that goodness. And if we continue in that process, purging out all the that is evil, and God's going to be doing the work there, but we've got to cooperate with him by our looking at these things that are eternal and looking at who we are, what we're doing, what we're thinking and saying, what's in our hearts, and then yielding ourselves to him so he can form us in his image in that way. Is he going to do that with us if we don't have our eyes looking at those things, at his purpose and at eternity that we're seeking to be prepared for by fulfilling his purpose? Well, that's not going to happen any other way. We're out of time for this morning. If you have not yet begun that process of, first of all, seeking God, have your old man crucified with him, to look to glorify him as God, this is an opportunity for you to start that process. Don't have that lie in your right hand that says you're going to be here forever, or that even though you're not, you can go ahead and live for this world anyway. That's a big lie. Turn to God to glorify him as God. Prepare yourselves for eternity by seeking and serving the one who made you that you belong to. There's nothing else that we should spend any of our time on this earth doing. Everything, and we're dead. If you're ready to be dead, crucify your old man with Christ, then it's time for you then to be buried with him in baptism and be raised to walk in newness of life. We're encouraging you to do that now if that is your need. If you're a member of the body of Christ, if you've been setting your affection on the things of this earth again, or in some way you've not been continuing to look at the eternal things, if you need to repent of anything or need the prayers and encouragement of the church here this morning, you have an opportunity to come now also. Anyone that needs to come, please do so right now while we stand together and sing.